you care, you will go to www.keepoceansclean.org and see what you can do to make a difference. Thank you.
No, thank you. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook. It's time once again for Off the Wall. Well, it's another Tuesday evening, and that means it's another edition of Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this delightful Tuesday, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yeah, I'm here. It's Tuesday.
It's a nice day, isn't it? It's crisp, you know, one of those days that's not too hot, not too cold, not raining, not snowing.
It's pleasant.
It's pleasant. Pleasant. I always, you know, heard weathermen say tomorrow will be pleasant. And even as a kid, I was like, how dare you? Who are you to say what's pleasant and what's not? Maybe I think a storm is pleasant. It just always bothered me. So it's good to finally be able to speak out and say, yeah, today was pleasant, but that's our opinion only. You may have different opinions.
Yeah, decide for yourself.
Yeah, it's up to you.
It's just math.
Here at WUSB, we allow you to make up your mind on anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, that said, it is a nice day. And
it's the week after graduation.
Here at Stony Brook, yeah, you're right.
Is this what you would call an intercession session?
Well, it's not a session yet. I think it's just, it's sort of like purgatory, you know, it's like that void between one thing and another. So when we were walking over here, you noticed there weren't a lot of students, and the ones that were there are kind of like floating in limbo.
Yeah, exactly. Most of them were geese.
That was bizarre. Yeah, most of them are geese.
And
we don't mean that in a bad way.
And the only reason I ask is I just want to get my facts straight and no commentary on the geese.
Kyle, if there's one thing I've learned over the last few years, you don't have to get your facts straight. Nobody cares anymore. Whatever facts you feel like conjuring up, that becomes your reality.
Yeah, yeah. But I take it, you know, I treat it on a case-by-case basis.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, I'm happy to know. I'll call it some sort of inter-school session.
Okay, yeah. It's you know, more parking spaces for us.
Well, it really was a delight to...
Took up three parking spaces.
Do you think they'll notice?
I hope they do. I really do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
that's hard to do with a smart car, you know.
It is. It's really difficult. But we managed to sort of zigzag and leave pieces of the car, a spare tire and a cooler. And
it's our way of just saying we were here.
One traffic cone.
Yes. Well, you know, not everybody fared so well. You know, a guy got struck by lightning on Sunday. Remember that storm that came through on Sunday?
I remember it. It was an incredibly powerful lightning and thunderstorm. Not a lot of wind. I mean, it was windy, but...
Watching an episode of Chernobyl or something, and all of a sudden you hear this thunder hitting close, and, oh boy, that's a powerful TV show.
Yeah, we had the appropriate programming. It seems like even some of the other, whether it was news or anything, it just it fit the mood, the slow rumbling. But I would not have wanted to be out on the water or swimming or really doing anything. You'd want to maybe stay inside, stay close to the building. I probably take shelter, you know, near your front door, perhaps by a porch.
Why do we have to tell people this? It's common sense. Yeah, you know what? If a storm is going by, just stand on your front porch and watch it. You're safe there. Actually, looking at the story I just got, I had the story, but I'm reading it now for the first time. This guy, Jonathan Borriello of Northport, he was on the front porch when a tree about 11 feet away was struck by lightning. And get this, the bolt ricocheted and struck Borriello on the left shoulder and arm. He was thrown about 20 feet. Oh, I would have... Nothing against you, Jonathan, but I would have liked to have seen that. I would have liked to have seen... It's kind of like, you know, one of the Exorcist movies or something where you get hit by something and you get thrown down a hallway. That doesn't really happen often in real life.
It's a lot of energy.
And it happened to you.
Yeah.
That's kind of awesome. He was conscious and alert, said a representative of the Northport Fire Department. Taken to Huntington Hospital, where he was treated for non-life-threatening injuries and released on his own recognizance. He went out on the front porch, 10:48 p.m. Boy, someone's keeping logs. I'm impressed. 10:48 p.m., that's when he went out to the front porch to get a better view of the thunderstorm. And this is where it gets kind of weird. He saw a U.S. flag was being displayed. So I think it's the flag that got him into trouble. He just took the flag down and placed it on the porch when the nearby tree was struck. So, you know, if I was a religious man, I would say that God was upset that this guy chose to deal with a flag instead of taking cover away from the storm, the wrath of God himself. And that's, you know, it's just a theory. That's what happened.
Yeah, it's probably true. Definitely. The science of God would back that up.
But you can't leave a flag up in the storm. Is that what he was taking care of? Or was it at night? You're not supposed to leave a flag up at night, but everybody does it.
Look, flags can take care of themselves.
Yeah, you know, I kind of think they can.
They have lasted through wars. In fact, we're more proud of them when they're still standing after stuff like this. So just leave your flags alone, people. We can barely tell why they're up or down or halfway or three-quarters of the way. I mean, it's hard enough to keep track of what everybody's doing with their damn flags. Just let it billow in the wind.
Who makes up the rules about flags? Like, you have to salute, and when it gets there are times where you can burn it. When it's decrepit and things like that, you're supposed to burn it. But you're not supposed to burn it when you're protesting something, unless you believe in freedom of speech, and then, yeah, it's perfectly okay.
Yeah, Ash Wednesday.
Yeah, so all kinds of things you have to do and not do. All right, well, I have a lot to learn.
You know those VFW lodges that you see and you pass by them and you don't know what the heck's going on in there?
Veterans of Foreign Wars. What do they do inside these places?
They sit around.
I'm afraid to go up to them and ask what they do.
They sit around and make up these rules.
Are they the ones?
Yeah, and then they cook pancakes and...
Okay.
Sit smugly.
Why in God's name is Trump tweeting now? He's in England. It's isn't it the middle of the night now? Okay, whatever. You know, he was in Japan. He was tweeting at all hours then, and now he's in England. I like that he's away, that he's in different places. But he doesn't stop. He was tweeting on the plane coming into England, insulting the mayor of London, and then for some reason the mayor of New York City. Which just tells me that de Blasio has really gotten under his skin, so that's a plus for him. Well, that's going to be fun.
Getting his due while traveling.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll have more to say about our dear leader in just a little bit. Anything interesting happened this week that you can think of?
Oh, well, as we speak, that climate... trial is going on right now. It just started.
We talked about that last week, didn't
we? We did, yeah. We covered it a little bit. It's Giuliano versus USA, and it's taking place in the 9th District, and it's being live-streamed. So don't listen now. Listen to all the recordings people are making.
Yeah, because if you tune now, you're not tuning to us. Why did they start at 6 o'clock?
Look, we had this discussion. I don't even know. I can't tell you how many times... important, newsworthy, interesting things that will not be covered. I mean, honestly, will not be covered.
Well, it took you an hour and a half to find it on YouTube.
The mainstream, yeah, I mean, live stream, YouTube, it's buried. You can find it, but it won't be carried on the network. You can't set a DVR for any of this. Yeah, I was thinking that's a product YouTube could come up with, like a YouTube DVR, where basically... anything that's happening live on their streaming service, you can record on like a DVR, like cloud service they offer.
I think that is a good candidate for App of the Week.
Okay.
Oh, wait, that's the wrong show, though. I was supposed to do that tomorrow.
Well, I'm saying...
I'm off the hook. And you know what? We have different listeners. So on that show, just introduce that nonchalantly, like you just came up with the idea tomorrow.
Okay. Yeah. It was just... a random thing I've thought about while I was sitting
down. We talk less about tech on this show.
No, I don't want to talk about tech. I'm not trying to.
On this show, you shouldn't talk about tech.
No. And in fact, I don't want to talk about like some other app or company or something because this isn't a technical show.
No.
It should just be there because everything's easy in this show's world. And I don't have to think about technology. It just takes over my life for me.
It's just the magic that happens.
That's right.
We don't know how. We don't know why.
No.
That's how we go through things. But okay, that's an important case in two sentences. Why is this an important case, and why should people care?
It's important because it's talking about the impacts of the government condoning and companies being aware of the effects and impacts of climate in the future. And the plaintiffs are young people that will have to live in that future. And it's the first time this strategy has been taken. And really, it's been in the works and been going on for quite a while, so it's sort of oddly ready for a time when the leadership and the politicians, the political actors, are particularly hostile, right? The agencies and entities who would be concerned about a case like this are being challenged when not a lot of other cases or groups are challenging. I mean, of course, we're all trying to deal in under the circumstances because a lot of other stuff gets attention in this moment. But this has been going on and in the works, and it's particularly fitting for this moment because there aren't a lot of cases like this that are really standing up and defending what the country and our environment is facing.
And this is taking place where?
The 9th District, that is a circuit court in the western part of the country.
Okay.
That I believe the next appeal, I mean, there might be appellate courts in D.C. and stuff, but this is sort of on track to be before a Supreme Court, but it would be in this district court first.
It's just amazing that it takes a bunch of kids to bring the issue of climate change to a courtroom and national, international attention. You see it every week. You see the kids walking out of school. I don't think we see it enough in this country, and we're one of the biggest offenders, and certainly by pulling out of Paris, we definitely have made the situation a lot worse. So I don't see how any kid in his right mind or her right mind could stay in school on whatever days they do these walkouts, especially if they're walking out throughout Europe, throughout Asia. We need to be leading in that particular department as well. So I don't know. Maybe I'm just not seeing enough news coverage about it. It is kind of flowered by how the media portrays something. So you could easily think nothing is happening when something, in fact, is happening. So
well, and also, yeah, exactly. And those media forms, like, are sort of aimed towards an age group that has more – has lived lives such that, they, you know, they have more – allegiance and more less innocence, you know, looking at it from a less from a more jaded perspective, those media outlets. And what's inspiring as well in young people is their ability to communicate, their ability to talk about the issue without any kind of allegiance or alliance to, say, you know, a company or whatever, that, you know, now that they're in the workforce, maybe they are less inclined to be as idealistic. But in that age group, as a student, you're learning about the world, you're understanding about what's possible for your future, you have aspirations and so on that aren't like, you know, another 20 years in the cubicle and then retiring. Like, you're looking at the world with a different perspective, and instead of using traditional media, I think they're able to get the message out amongst other young people that are also at that critical point in their lives where things look wide open in a lot of ways, but are also, you know, dire, and they're not, you know, paid to ignore it as a lot of adults are.
Yes. Well, I just hope that they don't become too jaded by the time they reach voting age, which is 18 in this country. I think it should be 16, but that's a whole other thing. And when you go to college, obviously you have to vote somehow. Are you going to come home to vote, or can you vote at where you are? You have to work that out. In most places, you can vote at your university. Here at Stony Brook, that is certainly the case. So I just hope all those idealistic kids that are going out into the real world, you remember that, because it's hugely important.
We saw pictures of, I think European EU elections voting, I think in Holland, where you could submit your ballot on a tram.
They can do everything on a tram over there. Wow.
Yeah, I think you were showing me, or I just skimmed an article, but apparently people were submitting their ballots on a tram because it's Holland, and, well, you know, you're busy, you're getting around the city, and why not deliver your vote while commuting? And why wouldn't we have that on the LIRR or other such high-tech railroads?
Wow. Yeah, I got something to say about the LIRR, but we'll get to that in a minute. I was just thinking, you know, imagine when we have a leader that actually takes climate change seriously. And on that subject, Joe Biden is starting to embrace the Green New Deal. I think he sees the wind blowing. I think he realizes that he needs to get more progressive people on his side. Because right now it's kind of, he's a little too vanilla for so many people on the left, so many in the Democratic Party, and you know, it's different now than it will be during the actual campaign. We're well before when the campaign begins between Democrat and Republican, and unfortunately it is just going to be between those two parties. So right now we have a situation where we have, what, 23 people vying for the position, the nominee position in the Democratic Party, which a lot of people are criticizing. I think it's great. It's kind of like the FA Cup. You know, we have 1,000 teams entering, and you just keep whittling it down. But by the time you whittle it down, you know where people stand, and you see what their weak points and strong points are. You see how they react under pressure. And I think this is a good Democratic exercise here. So let's see if Biden is actually genuine in what he's saying. And if he's not, then other people will have at him, and you'll see who is actually standing up for something important and who can hold their own under pressure. These are important issues that we need to be tackling. Now, right now, I'll tell you, I'm not thrilled with Joe Biden. He's a little too bland for me. But come November 2020, if he's the one standing up against Trump, believe me, he will get my vote. And I think that's almost true of anybody in the world if they're standing up against Trump right now. And I look forward to a time when we're not constantly talking about this or bemoaning our fate, where we're actually moving ahead and doing something positive. And I don't care if it's somebody on the left or somebody on the right. We just need somebody whose feet are planted in reality. And how long are we going to keep saying, can you believe what he did, what he said? What's next? He outdid himself. So sick of it. Really so sick. I'm so sick of the people imitating him. My God, if I hear another Trump imitation, I think that's annoying me more than Trump itself. And think about what it took to get me there. So, yeah, I'm ready for a change.
Yeah, it's critical, I think, and I don't think any one of those Democratic candidates that is actually going to win that if they don't have a real environmental policy and Green New Deal-esque platform, they're not really going to be a winner. Like it is going to come that if you don't have a big Green New Deal type plan in your platform, I don't think you're coming out of that as the winner. I think it is could be because it encompasses a lot of different things, including infrastructure, including jobs and the economy, and arguably other aspects of the particular climate that we're in politically. So to ignore that as a part of your platform, I think you're not tying together all of the ends and the bits of people's political grievances that could be part of a larger thing going forward that encompasses a lot of those different subjects.
The thing about climate change and environmentalism and things like that is that it's not just a national, international issue. It's a local issue as well. In fact, it might even be more of a local issue than anything. So when we're talking about state politics or even local politics, there is always room for a position that encompasses environmentalism, green space, clean energy, things like that. And I don't care how far down the totem pole you go as far as who's being elected. They have to have a position on these things. They have to be held accountable because ultimately they are the ones that are responsible for things going right or things going wrong. So, you know, I'm looking at state programs that open up more space for windmills or for solar panels or things. You know, I just talked to somebody the other day who has solar panels on their house. Their electric bill is $12 a month. $12 a month is all they're paying for electric. I mean, wow. I didn't know it was that good. So people who argue against this, obviously there are vested interests in fuel of various other sorts, dirty fuel, and quote-unquote keeping jobs. It's nonsense because there are just as many jobs in any field selling these things, installing these things, maintaining these things. And look at the benefit. Not only are they paying $12 a month for electric, but they're not polluting in any way. It's simply incredible. Why aren't we all doing this? Why aren't we all pursuing this? And you know, we see movement in that direction. We see some positive movement from states like your state, Washington, my state, New York, and other states around the country, and also on a local basis, we're seeing that as well. We have to encourage things like that.
Yeah, and that's what the case for tying all these different issues together. I think it really, when you boil it down to the bottom line and quality of life, health, and well-being, this issue and the solutions therein really do tie it all together in pretty outstanding ways. And I like different types of transportation, like electric vehicles. Those things are steadily, you know, on the rise. They're not where they should be. I mean, we in by 2026 or 2030 should have like 15% or, we should have like 30% electric vehicles, which would mean we'd have to like significantly increase where that's going to go in the next 5 and 10 years. But if you look at the market, it's kind of going that way. I mean, you're at a point now where we're probably going to start seeing like small electric trucks, especially in the city. You know, transportation companies and delivery companies have definitely changed their investments away from different forms of transportation.
But, you know, the numbers you're citing, those are good numbers, but they're not good enough. We could go a lot faster than that if it was seen as a crisis. And, you know, I think of what Trump said today about there being no demonstrations in the U.K. where he is now. He thinks there are no demonstrations because they routed him around the demonstration. So he, in his mind, thinks that the only people out on the street in England today that are saying anything about his visit are patriotic people for some reason waving the American flag. Obviously not what's happening. If you look at the news, you'll see that. But it kind of raises the point that if we don't make it obvious to these people that this is an issue, that we are angry, that we are out there, they're not going to think that it's really true, that it's really happening. You have to get in their face. You have to make yourself loud. You have to be present on the streets and visible. And, you know, being in a free speech zone, no, that's not enough. Being out of sight of the leaders that you're trying to influence, that's not going to work either. You have to make sure that you are seen, that you are heard, that people know that you exist. And that is the only time you see change, when people realize. You watch when governments actually change in countries where that happens more frequently and more dramatically. It's because of that public reaction. It's because they realize, hey, we're in trouble here. We've got a crisis going on with the people because they're all out there on the streets. You know, we look back on Tiananmen Square. That was what propelled the Chinese government to panic and to massacre all those people. And, wow, you know, that was 30 years ago. 30 years ago today. Or yesterday, actually. But still, 30 years ago. That's something to think about. But just getting out there and making your presence known, making your views heard, is so critical. And I think too often what happens is we just assume that we don't count, that we don't matter. And that's so untrue. That's what they want you to believe, because that way they get to keep doing what they're doing. But that is not how it is. That's not reality.
The reality they would have you, I guess, believe is not necessarily what is possible. And that's where, like, whomever is going up against this administration really has to have that comprehensive understanding of what's possible to really carry an inspirational tone and bring a lot of people who are excited about what's possible to support them and back them when it comes down to debates and when it comes down to, the primary itself.
Hey, there was an article in Saturday's Newsday about a local race that's happening here. We've talked about this before. This is the local race for mayor of Port Jefferson, which is just to our east. It's a little village, quaint little village, where the ferry comes in from Connecticut, and people come out over the weekend because, I guess, Port Jefferson, you know, we're around here all the time, so to us, we just take it for granted. But to many people from the city, Port Jefferson is this charming place to go. It's kind of like going to New England, except not really going all the way there. You got your 24-hour wicker shops and, you know, various other attractions that people are drawn to. But this is an article about the mayoral race there, and we've mentioned this before, where a Trump surrogate, it sounds like science fiction, but a Trump surrogate is running for mayor against the incumbent. And we've talked about this guy quite a few times on this show. His name is John J. Laval. I'm not going to say he's evil personified, but he's working on it. And his cousin, the stadium here at Stony Brook, is named after him. I've got all kinds of issues with that. I think the stadium should be renamed to somebody a bit more palatable. But you know what? It's not his time. It's this guy's time. He's the former Suffolk County GOP chairman, He was President Trump's prime local cheerleader for the past 3 years. But, according to this article, he has gone silent about the commander-in-chief since launching a bid for the Port Jefferson Village mayoral race. And he's running against five-term incumbent Margot Garant. Five terms, wow. Now, he says, my decision to run has nothing to do with major party politics. Okay. He accused Garant of I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that correctly either. He accused Garant of trying to distract people from the real issues, and get ready for the real issues, gang violence, empty storefronts, and prostitution in the Upper Village. And by the Upper Village, he means Port Jefferson Station. You know, Port Jefferson Station has been run down for as long as I can remember. But to say that it's filled with gang violence and prostitution, I think that is just kind of fear-mongering and trying to get the authorities to clamp down, you know, maybe have some raids and just impose a Trumpian feel to the place where we're not going to take it anymore. It needs work. It needs work, obviously, but this worries me. Now, he says economically the village is falling apart. All right. Mayor Garant said Laval is just looking for a landing spot since his exit as party leader, and people are just asking why. I'm asking why. And I didn't know he was no longer party leader, so I guess maybe that's why. Garant said until Laval announced his candidacy, he showed no interest in village government. He's attended not one meeting. If he did, he'd know we have a whole plan for redeveloping the Upper Village. And actually, you know what? It didn't take much to find out about that. There's a piece that ran in it was on a website called GreaterLongIsland.com, this ran in April. It's all about renovating, rehabilitating Upper Port Jefferson or Port Jefferson Station. And these efforts were launched almost 10 years ago, and they've since been rechristened with the pop song-influenced title of the Uptown Funk. All right, well, you know, I can't really say how I feel about that. The development of a place called The Hills, which is a 70-plus rental apartment complex. It's on the corner of Texaco Avenue and Linden Place, you know, by that annoying traffic light.
By that, the futon and
yeah, the always going
store.
Out of business futon place. Yeah. It's one of the first big wins, according to this article, in reimagining the neighborhood as a transit-oriented development area, friendly to commuters and attractive to young professionals. Now, the reason they say that is because, well, the train station is right there. It always bothered me that the train station in Port Jefferson Station isn't linked better to Port Jefferson Village. But they've started little shuttles, free shuttles, in fact, that go from one to the other. Only in the summertime, but it would be nice to have, well, you know what I'd like. I'd like a light rail system.
They should have a tram that goes up and down.
I would like a tram, and you could vote on the tram as you went up and down.
That'd be awesome.
But whatever, I never get what I want.
Make it, like, completely automated.
But the idea of this plan, remember, I'm reading from months ago, the idea of the plan is to transform a long, blighted, crime-plagued area into a place that would be welcoming to visitors and attractive to people who want to live and work on Long Island, but desire the convenience of close transportation and the proximity to the already beautiful downtown Port Jefferson. The model of urban renewal is actually the village of Patchogue and its economic renaissance. I've heard that said a few times. Now, what Mayor Garant says, Rome was not built in a day. It's a heavy lift, step-by-step process. All kinds of multiple studies and plans have been submitted over the years. And this is basically the way these things come about. She had an interview with an entity called Greater Port Jeff. I'm not sure if it's a website or publication, but she outlined some of the requirements of New York State before the plan could be enacted. Now, part of the plan also, north of the LIRR, there's a building called the Bada Bing, or it used to be called the Bada Bing. It was a club there. They're developing a mixed-use building with a 100% affordable housing component. 100% affordable housing.
That's great.
Now, this is something the mayor says is needed, especially in transit-oriented development. Everybody is building market-rate housing in Port Jefferson. Translation, expensive.
Rich folks.
Everybody's building that. I'm a huge proponent of affordable housing. Bing, right? No pun intended for bada bing there, but bing, meaning that's it. That's what this guy Laval hates. uh-huh. is to hear about affordable housing, to hear about those people being located here, being allowed to live here, and not maybe building a casino, whatever he's got in mind for the place, after the ICE raids clear the place out, which I'm sure he's talking about in dark rooms
now. Think about that when he's talking about or waxing poetic about working people.
Uh-huh.
This is what really counts to working people. And I got to say, they've improved the station in Port Jeff Station. They've improved some of the parking and the throughway there by the taxi area and the crossing itself. There's little spots that are part of this comprehensive plan. People should really check it out, too.
It's tough. It's a tough thing to do, but the important thing is, like we were talking about, if you work locally and have your voice heard, you can actually make a difference. What does that area need? Well, affordable housing is certainly what it needs, and it's great to hear a building is going up with 100% affordable housing. We need more, obviously. We need more attractiveness, more greenery, things like that. There's talk also, we mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, of electrifying the LIRR all the way out to Port Jefferson. And it's actually being discussed because of the things Cuomo has done over the last few years. It actually has a possibility of happening. Imagine that. Two tracks from here to Huntington, which means two tracks pretty much into the city, much faster commute. You don't have those diesel fumes constantly being put into the air.
It's quieter.
It's revitalization in a different way because a train yard will be put somewhere else, opens up space in different locations.
Well, and you do these improvements as they complement one another. You know, once the trains are electrified, the station will have already been redone, and the uh-huh. parking lot and the the sort of natural flow of traffic will have already been addressed, and they fit one piece in with the next, and it's part of having a vision for the area. And this is all, mind you, while you're taking care of the day-to-day and the regular operations of a town which does flood when there's a big hurricane. I mean, if you've ever been to Port Jefferson, it's pretty much at sea level there, and a good part of the main street there does get affected by things like higher water levels and so on and so forth. So it's not a panacea, and it's not all happening at once the way it needs to. I know they just fixed or renovated parts of the ferry itself. There's another development down in Port Jefferson that has started up. I'm not sure how occupied it is or if it's anywhere close to market rate. But I think it is something like that. It's a big condo area. So these little incremental things mm-hmm. do fit into a larger plan. That's more individuals living downtown in Port Jefferson. So the same thing, if it was low-income and working people that are accessing a new electrified train, that all helps with the city's tax base and so on and so forth.
Improving the infrastructure is so key to moving ahead on these fronts, and having affordable housing, that is also key. And I think a lot of progress has been made. Now, affordable housing, according to the mayor, will help empty nesters who sell their homes, stay in the area, provide housing opportunities for young professionals and students who go here at Stony Brook. And these demographics could benefit from the close proximity of the LIRR. So, to say, Trump guy Laval claims that nothing is being done, the evidence doesn't show that. All you have to do is a little bit of research, a little bit. Even before this whole race was announced, you see the progress that's been made.
Yeah, and someone should ask him if there's a debate or an interview opportunity or the newspapers are writing.
There is a debate, actually. Well, here's the thing. The website was a little confusing because it said the debate was Tuesday, June 6th,
uh-huh.
and today's Tuesday, June 4th.
Oh.
So unless there's another Tuesday I don't know about, I think the debate is happening Thursday, June 6th.
They meant Thursday. Okay, well,
and it's at the Village Center in Port Jefferson starting at 6 p.m. So that's going to be interesting.
So my question would be, what is your vision? What is Mr. Loal's vision for this area, both areas, and what is his comprehensive plan? I bet he'll have to acknowledge the plan that's in place then, is real, and he has denied it, even though it's a fact, and all of a sudden he'll be giving lip service to being on board with it in some way or another, or how he has decided one or the other parts of it needs to be changed. Either way, confronting that would be very interesting, because I don't think his vision is as inspiring as what is actually in progress.
Yeah, well, he can claim credit for creating Port Jefferson Village's Harbor Walk, which apparently he was part of as supervisor of Brookhaven Town. He lived in the village from 1993 to 2004. Then he moved to Mount Sinai and returned in 2013, first renting and then buying a condominium in 2016. Meanwhile, Garant is a Democrat. She's led the village for a decade under the banner of the Unity Party. She is a lawyer who has practiced locally for two decades and has lived in the village since age nine. Her mother also served as village mayor. She says she's run a clean campaign, tried to stick to the issues. She said Port Jefferson is an educated and involved community with residents who understand the risks when you switch gears in midstream from an incumbent who is working hard. Now, Laval, whose slate is running on the Residents First Party, which right away, even the name of his party sounds nationalistic, Residents First Party, he said he expected no backlash over his support for Trump. Okay, so right away, the guy is, like, delusional. No backlash for his support for Trump. Okay, fine. Saying village issues have nothing to do with national politics or any other political figure. Really? Not at all? Not even a slight relationship to the way you run a village, to the way the country is being run? I think there's a lot you can explore there.
You know the slogan they're using is, I think it goes something like, united we can do it, or something, or like, you know, together we can do it. Or it's this like unifying thing, which is pretty counterintuitive.
Well, there is a progressive independent expenditure group known as Taking Action for Suffolk County. Did you know we had a progressive group in Suffolk County? Yeah, they ran a full-page ad last week. They don't say where they ran it in.
Yeah.
But somewhere, where it was something that's printed, they ran a full-page ad, including a photo of Laval hugging Trump. Yeah.
it's together we can do better. That's what it is.
Well, that's okay.
So him and Trump together?
You're talking about the big banner that's on the corner.
They're using it elsewhere.
In Port Jefferson, the guy that tore down the statue of Thomas Jefferson, not because he was a slaveholder, but because he wasn't American enough and decided to put up a 9/11 eagle instead, whatever a 9/11 eagle is. It's
ice cream shop guy.
Yeah, the ice cream shop guy basically keeps putting all these pro-Trump things up on the corner there. So he has a huge Laval sign there now, which is kind of pointless because the only people that see that are tourists, really, and they're not going to be voting for this. It's kind of like the circle of evil that exists around us. You know, you've got the Mercers and Head of the Harbor who are responsible for a lot of what's going on with the Trump regime. Don't tell me it's not local. It's local, all right? There's a lot of local influence here on national politics, and the way that you run a village, the way that you you present yourself, and the way you speak to people that live here, and the things you put in their heads, the fear mongering about immigrants or particular parts of town or just what certain people are like, that very much plays off of what's happening nationally. So anyway, these people taking action for Suffolk County, they ran a full page ad that showed Laval hugging Trump. It says Laval wants to bring Trump's brand of partisan politics into our village for his own political gain. He basically accused the group of working with the mayor. The mayor says the executive director of the group, Brian Irwin, says the group has had zero contact with either her or her campaign. They decided to get involved because Laval's Trump-styled rhetoric was bringing toxicity to what traditionally is a nonpartisan mayor's race, setting a dangerous precedent. And, you know, I just looking at this article, it says here that this mayoral battle is likely to only get more intense by June 18th. For some reason, the election is on June 18th, so it's coming up soon. That's why we're talking about it now. But voters in the 8,000-resident village go to the polls to vote on the, ready for this, $19,000-a-year mayor's job. $19,000 a year is all the mayor makes? I mean, that's incredible. Obviously, you have to do more than just be the mayor, but I just assumed it was a lot more than that. But that's small village mayors for you.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's a small village.
Wow. Well, okay, hopefully she doesn't, or anyone who has this job doesn't have to live on that. I'm sure the Trump guy won't have any trouble. Okay, so speaking of our favorite president over in the UK, you're supposed to be boycotting AT&T now because, well, Trump doesn't like what he sees on TV. He's slamming CNN's negative coverage of his state visit to the UK. By the way, this is a state visit. Do you know how many state visits there have been from United States presidents to the United Kingdom?
Three.
You knew that because I tweeted that.
No.
You knew that because you looked it up yourself?
No.
You knew that because it's a wild guess?
Yes.
Damn it. Well, you're right. It's exactly three. I just assumed there were state visits all the time, but a state visit is different from an official visit or a working visit or all kinds of other visits. It's when the leader of the state invites you, and I'm not really sure what the other differences are, but the first one, the first state visit of a U.S. president to the United Kingdom was George W. Bush, if you can believe that. And the second one was Obama, and the third one is Trump. So it's kind of like they just started doing it.
Yeah, it's not as formal as some of the other visits. Or I guess since the revolution, we've maybe not had as normal a relations. And then after maybe World War II, we're like, okay, you know, we'll hang out, but we're not going to do anything formal. And then W rolls around.
Well, I mean, keep in mind, that whole period before we had airplanes, they couldn't just make a visit over to the United Kingdom because they'd have to take a boat.
It would be an ocean liner.
Yeah, whole thing there. So, all right, so you go from, say, the 30s or something onwards. And, yeah, I guess I just didn't get around to it for some reason. Whatever. So anyway, yeah, he's upset that he was unable to watch Fox News over in the United Kingdom. Here's what his tweet said. Just arrived in the United Kingdom. This is after he was tweeting from the plane and insulting the mayor. The only problem is that CNN is the primary source of news available from the U.S. After watching it for a short while, I turned it off. All negative and so much fake news. Very bad for U.S. Big ratings drop. Why doesn't owner AT&T do something? And he wants AT&T, he wants us to boycott AT&T so that they put the pressure on CNN to stop saying bad things.
Yeah, which is funny. It's that's a quite a distinction from having complaints about just programming in general. Like, that's a very specific editorial position you'd like them to take because you're not happy with the choices of channels you get. I mean, this kind of that's going a little far, right? I mean, it sounds like something we would say. We're always like, okay, why is this the only station we can see in English, or why is this the only coverage on this particular package we're, you know, in a hotel or on a, you know, different network outside the country? But, yeah, he wants them to change their editorial practices because he couldn't tune away and watch anything but them.
The thing is, he could watch there's other channels there. First of all, Sky News, they're the parent company of Fox. He's upset that he can't get Fox. Sky News is actually not bad. It's not great, but it's certainly nothing like Fox News. Maybe that's why he hates it so much or doesn't like it, doesn't actually turn it on.
If Fox wanted to rebrand as Sky in the U.S., like they did Sky USA, and, like, dissolve Fox News.
Why would they want to?
No, I know. But, well, if they wanted to be on the right side of things.
So, basically, I just found this out by looking at this story. But in August of 2017, 21st Century Fox, which is the parent company of Fox News, announced that Fox News would no longer be broadcast in the UK after failing to attract an audience. Imagine that. I had no idea that they were that unpopular, but apparently they only got a few thousand viewers, and it just wasn't worthwhile, and they certainly aren't going to keep it on for him.
Yeah, they may be pro-Brexit, but they're not crazy.
Other news closer to home, White House has directed Hope Hicks and Annie Donaldson not to turn over documents, which is going to lead to votes of contempt of Congress for them as well. You know, here's my proposal to everybody, because there's all this talk in the Democratic Party about should we impeach or should we not impeach. How about this? You turn over what they ask for, and you don't get impeached. You follow the law. You don't get impeached. Continue this. Continue to tell people to just ignore subpoenas and just not comply. You get impeached. Doesn't matter how politically sensitive it is. You do it because he's breaking the law flagrantly. And if you let him get away with it, he's going to keep doing it. So that's a message to Democrats and Republicans alike. Break the law, flout the law, and encourage people to do the same thing. Regardless, you get impeached. It just seems like common sense.
Yeah, that's critical for me. I think when I think about this, the not divulging the entirety of the report to House leadership is such a glaring and obvious double standard that sets them up to be treated the same way if Democrats come into power. Meaning a Democratic leader could act just as flagrantly and disregard the law and requests from oversight. And I think it's something that Republicans would remind us. We were when the Supreme Court seats and those kinds of leadership changes occurred. This should be taken as seriously by Republicans, and they're not.
And the thing is, it has a trickle-down effect because people emulate what they see their leaders doing. There's reports of children throughout the country refusing to go to the principal's office when they're told to go to the principal's office because they just choose to ignore it. And look what's happening. It's spreading everywhere. So this is not something that we should tolerate because you'll see people just choosing not to obey subpoenas, arrest warrants, tickets, whatever. It's going to happen, believe me. Did you see this amazing letter we got today from our friend Karamoon?
Yes, I read it.
Yeah, it's just, this is really incredible. He's over in Western Tokyo. He says, I'm writing to you from Western Tokyo. On the day of the 30th anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre, it's a day to reflect on how the world is and, just as importantly, on how the world could be. Well, this was written, I guess, last night. The anniversary, I think, was the 3rd. We should all be concerned that basic freedoms we take for granted are still unknown in China. In that sense, maybe little has changed in the past 30 years. Worryingly, China's economic growth and consumerism are likely to have a pacifying effect on the population there. And, you know, this is something that we notice here. If you give people what they want, give them all their appliances and television sets and cars and things like that, they don't care so much about censorship and freedom of speech and things like that. Pacifying. It works everywhere.
Yeah, if it's not religion, it's the religion of capitalism.
Well, censorship and surveillance in China are becoming increasingly sophisticated. This is thanks in part to Western companies, which provide much of the hardware and software needed for the Great Firewall of China. Now, one thing we can all do is keep talking about what happened and what's happening now. We need to learn the specifics. Who is profiting from the oppression of the Chinese people? Where does the true power lie? To whom is the money flowing? For some background, I urge everyone to listen to a remarkable piece of radio from June 3rd, 1989. It's an episode of Brain Damage. That's my show. That's the show I was doing then.
Yes.
On this very radio station. Wow. I cannot believe this. Episode of Brain Damage, discussing the events in Tiananmen Square and the unfolding reaction in other countries. I've probably heard it more than 20 times over the past 15 years, and it's yet to lose any of its power. I just cannot believe that someone listened to it that many times, but thank you for that high compliment. Your listeners can find the episode at 2600.com/braindamage/1989, and just go to the June section, 0689.html. And I know we talk about Tiananmen Square throughout the month of June, too, so you might find some other interesting things as well. But also, it's a nice time capsule of that period of time. Well, pre-9/11, we had the first Bush in power. It was a different time, but how we dealt with the Tiananmen Square events, that's pretty interesting. And also, I remember we were getting cassette tapes from the government of China before that, where they were portraying the people, the students in Tiananmen Square, in a very positive light, and that all of a sudden changed after the events of June. Now, continuing with the letter, it may be natural to feel there's little to be optimistic about in 2019. However, I think there's everything to be hopeful for. What's the difference? Optimism is a somewhat naive belief that things will magically get better. but hope is the knowledge that it's still worth fighting to make the world better for ourselves and others. And that is just, that's beautiful. That is it exactly. Thank you, Karamoon, for this amazing letter from Tokyo. And, yeah, keep striving for these viewpoints on the world, because it all matters. This is something that you may not hear about in the media much, but it's there. It's there if you look for it, if you analyze it, if you listen. And I'm really honored that you find my humble radio show from the 1980s as something worth listening to now, something that actually could open eyes. I might even listen to it again, because I don't know if I have listened to it in many years. There's probably something quite interesting there, and probably something I got completely wrong as well.
Indeed, yeah. Check that out.
Yeah, it's always good to keep these things, to keep records of the things that you do, whether it's printed word or recorded word or video or things like that. Hold on to it. It does matter. It does count more as the years go by. And speaking of things that count more as the years go by, we're coming up on the 75th anniversary of D-Day. In fact, that's on Thursday. That's why Trump is over there in the UK. I don't know what he's going to do to embarrass us this year. Last year, he couldn't even visit the cemetery because it was raining. I don't want to remember that. There are so many stories. In fact, I suggest, speaking of listening to things from the past, everybody should go to archive.org and just search for D-Day radio, both CBS and NBC. You will find 24 hours of recordings of that day as it was unfolding. It's the most fascinating thing to listen to. I've been listening to it for the last day or so, into hour number four already. And just to hear how the news was broken and developed, and the interviews and the technical problems and all kinds of cool things like that, it really it makes it so interesting and vibrant. But most of all, it gets you to remember what was happening in the world at that particular time, the sacrifices people made to literally save the world from evil. It was a very different time, something we might not be able to comprehend now. But if you listen to that firsthand account, I think you'll get it. I think you'll understand. And it's an event that is really significant. And I hope that we pay it the attention it deserves and not get overshadowed by foolishness that might be happening as a result of that particular day.
Truly, truly. And listen to the stories. And let's try to avoid such events, such things from happening again, and think of be thankful for the people that fight for peaceful resolutions to this stuff, and sort of intelligent ideal vision of our crazy world in as opposed to what history has taught us.
Well, that's going to do it for us tonight here on Off the Wall. You can write to us, otw@2600.com. I hope that that people pay attention to what's going on in the current world and what's going on in the future, as well as keeping a close eye on what happened in the past, because that is super important. That is something that we always can learn from. With that, I'd like to introduce our outro tonight. This is a song by The Clash that nobody ever plays, and it's a shame, because I think it's one of their most significant ones, a real masterpiece. And I encourage people to listen to the lyrics, really listen to these lyrics. And anything that you hear that doesn't make sense and you don't know the reference, look it up. Look it up and learn, because there is so much history in this particular piece and so much that can be applied to today that it really is an amazing benefit to be able to listen to this. And most of all, you will not regret this history, and you also not repeat it by learning. With that, have a good night. We'll see you next week. Good night.
They say the immigrants steal the hubcaps of respected gentlemen. They say it would be wine and roses if England were for Englishmen again. I saw a dirty overcoat at the foot of the pillar of the road. Propped inside was an old man. the time could not erode. The night was snapped by sirens, those blue lights circled past. The dogs all called for an ambulance, the bars all closed up fast. My silence gazing at the ceiling, alone in a single room. I thought the old man could help me.